Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, February 12th, 2021. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, it is Casual Friday, folks. Joining us will be Ben Dixon from the Benjamin Dixon Show. Also on the program later, writer David Roth from The Defector. Defector. Meanwhile, it is day four of impeachment. Trump's defense team will be up and wants it over quick. Really quick. Meanwhile, evidence mounts that Trump knew Pence was in danger. But apparently, the military was unaware that his nuclear football was in danger, too. Andrew Cuomo now forced to admit that his administration unreported nursing home COVID deaths and how much his administration exposed them to infection. White House defers to the CDC on school reopenings as the Center for Infectious Diseases say 50% of transmissions are pre- or asymptomatic transmissions. Biden will rescind permission to states to impose Medicaid work requirements on Medicaid recipients. And on immigration, the new administration rolls back the Remain in Mexico policy. The Lincoln Project, remember those guys? Well, they're imploding. And in their process, they're revealing that its members have all made millions. Near 800 nurses authorize a strike in Worcester, Massachusetts hospital over corporate greed. The Biden administration says that the U.S. will have enough vaccines to vaccinate 300 million people by the end of July. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the program. Emma Vigeland is on vacation. So she, of course, will be back next week. And thank you for joining us on this casual Friday. I am solidarity with those nurses in Worcester, Massachusetts, from the hospital that my sister was born at. So they have voted to authorize a strike. They, of course, as you would want any hospital in central Massachusetts to be, owned by a massive medical holding company based in Texas. And this is a story you hear, you know, if you know anyone who's a nurse, you hear these stories of these massive hospital corporations looking to do cutbacks and to reduce costs at every point. Marlena Pellegrino, co-chair of the nurses' local bargaining unit, said, with this vote, that's the authorization vote, our members are sending a powerful message to Tenet Healthcare that we will do whatever it takes to protect our patients and our community in the face of their blatant disrespect and corporate greed. Nurses say they're seeing an increase in patient falls and preventable bed sores. St. Vincent's Hospital, as well as delays in patients receiving medications and treatments, all due to inadequate staffing. The interesting thing about the way that the co-chair of the nurses' local bargaining unit is framing this is reminiscent of what we've seen with some of the teacher strikes across the country. That is, they are framing their problems with management in a broader context of issues that are not just facing them as nurses, but issues that are facing the people that they help. Far more effective strategy, social justice unionism is what they call it, where you fight not just for the immediate concerns of a union, but you also fight for the concerns of the community that you live in and serve. So good luck to those teachers up there in Worcester, my hometown. Had to give them a plug, and we do this also for other unions around the country. Meanwhile, impeachment's not going so well for the Republicans. And today the defense will present their case, and there are reports now that they are attempting to... There's a lot of editing going on, it appears, in their defense. They want to do this quick. And this is coming in the wake of reports that three senators, who are ostensibly the jurors, the impartial jurors, the jurors who are keeping an open mind and listening to the case, met with defense attorneys, talking about Lindsey Graham, Ted Cruz, and Mike Lee, having met with the defense attorneys as jurors. Not a huge surprise, but there is apparently some concern amongst Republicans that this is hurting them politically. If that is the case, my suggestion would be to the Democrats to call witnesses and let's expand on this. Impeachment is playing out exactly, I think, as some of us anticipated, which is it is shining a light on those in the Republican Party, which, let's be clear, is the vast overwhelming majority of the party, to the extent that it's almost useless to talk about the four or five or six who find it in their best interest to distance themselves from Donald Trump in the Senate. Never mind the House. The Republican Party is the party that gave birth, that rose Donald Trump up. They are responsible for him, and impeachment is putting a very, very fine point on that fact, because now that ostensibly Donald Trump is not there as their president, is not there to extract a political price on them, they are still defending this man's behavior, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Everything about him. And here is Representative Jamie Raskin, who has delivered some really incredible work as one of the House managers. In fact, they all have done amazing jobs, as far as I can tell. He is arguing yesterday that if Trump returned, does anybody think that he would do any more to rein in his supporters now or in the future than he did then?
He said over and over his supporters are loyal. In his own words, his supporters are the most loyal that we've seen in our country's history. And he knew that his most hardcore supporters were willing to direct violence at elected officials, indeed to attack and lay siege to a Capitol building. And he knew they would be ready to heed his call on January 6th to stop the steal by using violence to block the peaceful transfer of power in the United States. He knew they were coming. He brought them here. And he welcomed them with open arms. We hear you and love you from the Oval Office. My dear colleagues, is there any political leader in this room who believes that if he is ever allowed by the Senate to get back into the Oval Office, Donald Trump would stop inciting violence? to get his way? Would you bet the lives of more police officers on that? Would you bet the safety of your family on that? Would you bet the future of your democracy on that? President Trump declared his conduct totally appropriate. So, if he gets back into office and it happens again, we'll have no one to blame but ourselves.
He went on and said, actually, more than didn't he call the speech perfect? Perfect speech. How many times over the past couple of days have we heard Republicans, whether it's their mouthpieces at Fox or in the Senate? He didn't know what he was doing. If anything got out of control, it was surely by mistake. Yet, in retrospect, he still characterizes the speech as perfect. And let's just play this clip of Lindsey Graham on Sean Hannity's program from Wednesday night. This is a sign that they are panicking. Because you know that if the Republicans felt that they weren't feeling any pressure for defending Donald Trump by normal people in the country, they would be out there touting the fact that there is no case. They would be talking about impeachment. But instead, here's Lindsey Graham. This is an interesting theory.
Go ahead. You go.
Can I say something right quick?
You bet.
New evidence makes you do that. The only reason they're trying to create this bizarre storyline that Trump was in on it, along with Dan Scavino, is that we now know, after impeachment that was done without a lawyer, without a hearing, without any witnesses, that the FBI and the Capitol Hill police actually now understand this was pre-planned. They were planting bombs the night before. So the whole storyline that Donald Trump caused this by his speech has fallen apart due to good law enforcement activity. And here's what I want to know. What did Nancy Pelosi know, and when did she know it? If this was widely known by the FBI and Capitol Hill Police that people were planning to come to Washington before the 6th to create violence, I want to know, did she know about that? The whole storyline originally was Trump created this from a speech. Now we know the people had this on their mind before he ever spoke, so they're playing this bizarre game of trying to get Trump in on it before January the 6th. This is why you don't want to have snap impeachments. Evidence really does matter.
Well, evidence matters big time because it's now coming in. All right. Now.
So the argument that Lindsey Graham is trying to make here is that the case against Donald Trump is just what he did at that speech. Not the idea that he would plan a rally for that day. Not the idea that he had been fomenting this idea that there was a stolen election for weeks and weeks after the election. Weeks and weeks, months, years before the election. This was not a pop-up insurrection speech. There was planning. Why would you plan it on January 6th? Why wouldn't you plan it on January 5th? Why would you plan it? Because you wanted those people there when that certification vote was happening at that exact moment. Why would you send them down to the Capitol while that certification was happening? Is because you had planned it for that moment. And if Mike Pence had done what Donald Trump had wanted him to do, maybe you don't need those people to march there. Maybe you don't need them to crash into the Capitol. Maybe you just have them outside to make sure that Mike Pence does what he was told to do by Donald Trump. And the idea that somehow Nancy Pelosi, this was some type of honey trap set by Nancy Pelosi, is laughable. It will resonate on Fox News, and it will probably grow into a full-blown conspiracy theory on OWN or Newsmax or wherever into the fever swamps. But this is an indication of how nervous they are of this thing continuing. And we'll talk to Ben Dixon in just a moment about other reasons why we should keep this going, because they seemingly are able to do two things at once, both implicate the Republican Party in all of this and get their work done in terms of the COVID relief. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back in just a moment. Emma's going to be sorry she missed this message from our sponsor today. It's a the 2021, folks. New rear, new you. Don't just make a commitment to wash your hands every time you go. Go the extra mile. Wash your butt. That's right. This is our sponsor today, Hello Tushy. And there's a brand new Hello Tushy 3.0 modern bidet attachment. It's finally here. It's stylish. It's eco-friendly. Easy to install. Super easy to install. And affordable. I'm sure that you know people who have told you what a revelation it is to have a bidet. Well, it's a big commitment. Put in an entirely new, what do you call it? Like a bathroom fixture, I guess. Well, you don't need to do that to get a bidet. Hello Tushy 3.0 doesn't just cleanse your butt with a precise stream of water. It cleans itself. And it does it before and after it's used with the Smart Spray automatic self-cleaning nozzle. This is super easy. It attaches to your toilet. You don't need any electricity. You don't need any additional plumbing. You just take off your toilet lid. You drop it on. You put the toilet seat back on. You unscrew a couple of things, a wrench maybe. With Hello Tushy, you save toilet paper use by 80%. You don't wipe. What happens is it washes you, and then you just pat dry yourself. Sanitation is simple. Knobs are naturally antimicrobial. Every Hello Tushy bidet attachment comes with a 60-day risk-free guarantee and a 12-month warranty. You can upgrade to the new 3.0 model, which I'm waiting on to get, because I have the classic. I guess I have the classic or the 2.0. I don't know what it is called, but I'm loving it. I'm never going to go back. Is that a pun? I guess so. Right now, you can do this with every flush. Believe me, I know it sounds weird. It's really, I blame Kyle, because he said to me early on in COVID, when there was these toilet paper things, he said he got a bidet and got like a fancy one from Japan or something crazy like that. And I'm like, I can't, I'm not going to invest that type of thing. And Hello Tushy, go to hellotushy.com/majority. Get 10% off plus free shipping. This is a special offer for our listeners. Go to HelloTushy, TUSHY.com/majority for 10% off. HelloTushy.com/majority. You know you have always been intrigued. Buy a bidet, folks. HelloTushy.com/majority for 10% off. Check it out. You will not be sorry you did. Also, just got this text from my sister just literally moments ago. First off, she wanted to remind me that both my sisters were born at that hospital in Worcester. Apologies, Betsy. She also just said, Dad had a piece of the CBD fudge last night and had the best sleep he ever's had. I also happen to think that my father just likes eating fudge. But one of our sponsors is SunsetLakeCBD.com. We've been talking about their products now for almost a year, and they're fantastic. Great company, great business practices, $15 minimum wage, mostly employee-owned company, and they have great farming practices, pesticide-free. They use integrated pest management for their hemp crops. They work with the University of Vermont to do integrated farming and agriculture, I guess. And their products are just fantastic. I am a big fan of their CBD full-spectrum tincture. Sometimes I use the 1,500 mg. Sometimes I use the 3,000 mg, 750. All fantastic in helping me sleep. Their CBD gummies are delicious. And they have, I also, I'm a big fan of their CBD in infused coffee. They have a Costa Rican roast right now, which is Rainforest Alliance certified. They have their Kenyan roast as well, although I think that may be out of stock right now. And then they have smokables. Matt, tell folks about your experience with the smokables.
Well, I have some of the smalls in my grinder right now. They're like pre-stemmed buds right in a pack, so they're very convenient just to stick in. Very innovative, I thought. So, yeah, check out the smalls. And obviously, you know, they have pre-rolls, and they have massive pre-rolls, like foot-long ones if you want it, but probably stick with the smalls.
Yeah, I like the pre-rolls myself because I'm not into the entire, the whole thing involved, you know, with the grinding and all this. But they just released, and they have a low amount of stock, I think, left because it's a huge hit. Sunset Lake Chocolate Fudge. It is, A, it's delicious, and B, when you ingest the CBD, it has a different effect. It really is, chill. And, my problem, of course, is that I really, really have a sweet tooth. And so I am overindulging in the fudge area. But I've gotten great reports. People on Twitter have been tweeting at me saying that they love the fudge. It's fantastic. So it's worth checking that out right now. And so head over to sunsetlakecbd.com. They are fans of the show. They want their coupon code to be LEFTISBEST, one word. Left is best, one word, 20% off anything that you order. Check it out right now. You got all sorts of options. SunsetLakeCBD.com. Great company, great product. Very excited that they are sponsoring this show. Okay, let's welcome to the program the proprietor of the Benjamin Dixon Show. Ben Dixon is joining me. Ben, great to see you. Thanks for being here.
Sam's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So, Ben, tell me, you know, I think there was some skepticism about impeachment over the past couple of weeks, particularly in the trial. There was some concern, like, you know, would the Democrats be able to get to what they need to get to in terms of the COVID relief bill?
Right.
We know that right now the committees are dealing with each part of the bill. They are preparing to do it through reconciliation. It's sort of a downtime. Some of that stuff is sort of a little bit obscured from public view. So impeachment has sort of filled that void. And give me your sense of how impeachment is going.
I mean, surprisingly enough, I think the Democrats made a pretty convincing case because it was a pretty straightforward case, right? There's a direct line between what happened and Donald Trump. And the real question is, can they pick up enough Republican senators to actually convict them? But I think the presentation was a lot stronger than the first time around. But again, I think it's because this case is that much easier to prove. So the real question will there be any Republicans who will go along with the obvious here?
All right. Well, here's my answer. Probably not. I mean, right. Look, Collins, Murkowski, Romney, Sasse, Toomey, even I think Cassidy, they've all indicated at least some openness to the idea that there's jurisdiction here. Mm-hmm. And that may be, you know, and once they vote against Trump once, they've sort of set their bed on some level. So they may join. It's also possible you could get like four or five more, right? Like, right. You know, if I'm Cassidy and Toomey and Sasse and Sasse and I'm thinking like, you know, if we can get 10, if we can get four more people, we can at least project that we might be able to pass some legislation with the Democrats in the future, because that's the magic number, right? You need 10. You need 16 for a conviction, but you need 10 to pass legislation to get past. Buster. And so they may be positioning in such a way that, you know, we want to be partners in basically putting the brakes on any type of like big legislation. But I think there's also, what's your sense of like how effective this is in flipping the other way, that when all these Republicans in the face of this refuse to vote against Trump, it's sending a signal to people like Joe Biden that, hey, look, dude, there's no partners over here.
Right.
We're not getting anywhere with these people. We're going to have to go this alone if you want to pass anything.
Yeah. No, I certainly hope Joe Biden has that disposition already. But to your point, right, I think this is a clear example. This is that I don't want to overstate the simplicity of this particular case. But if we can't get Republicans to defend the Republic, right? Then what can we count on them for? And then maybe if that does push Joe Biden to just play some hardball for the next 4 years, I think that's beneficial too. So Republicans can turn this into a lose-lose situation if they're more interested in defending Donald Trump than they are the democracy.
The I mean, that to me, I mean, the way you just you put it there, it's like if you can't get the Republicans to vote that Donald Trump did something wrong here,
right?
What are you going to get them to vote for? Like, the fever. It's, I mean, the point being, it's not a fever that to be breaking. Like, this is their normal culture, right?
Right. Yeah. No, that's it. This is their normal behavior pattern. This is not a symptom. This is the problem. This is how they operate. This is how they show up. They play a level of absolutism, of a Machiavellian politics, which they will not give us an inch, even if that means giving us an inch means defending this democracy. Right. So if they're going to play this zero sum game, right, winner takes all, real politic version of politics, then the Democrats have no choice but to respond in kind. The question I guess I have is, why did it take this incident for Democrats to realize this when Republicans have really been operating like this since 2000, since the George W. Bush election?
Well, I don't know. You answer the question for me. I mean, why do you think it's taken so long?
I don't know. I mean, if I give the Democrats the benefit of the doubt, I guess hope springs eternal, right? You know, you keep working and keep hoping that maybe you're not dealing with just like nihilists who will destroy and see everything burn. But after a while, you have to wake up and deal with what the reality says. The reality says that Republicans have been playing a scorched earth game, honestly, since Newt Gingrich came into power as Speaker of the House during Bill Clinton's administration. They turned the corner there in our lifetime, maybe their previous examples. Maybe Democrats did this previously, but in our lifetime, the way Republicans have been operating in this system since at least Newt Gingrich has shown us that we should never try to triangulate with them. And we need to play hardball with them because they're waiting. They're lying in wait to play hardball with us.
I mean, it is amazing how persistent this notion that there's a partner on the other side has been. I mean, I'm just even thinking, like, it was 3 months ago where Dianne Feinstein is congratulating Lindsey Graham on slamming through a Supreme Court justice with like weeks to go.
Right.
There is some compulsion that they have. And I wonder if this will finally do it. I mean, you know, on some level, the personal terror that they, I mean, that we've seen them have in these videos,
yeah,
you would think would do it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I would think, but then something else dawned on me. I think Democrats might actually know that they're dealing with extremists who would burn down this democracy. Cause imagine if Democrats operated exactly like Republicans operated in terms of holding the line, never triangulating, never seeking bipartisanship, shoving through. If Democrats absolutely carry themselves the way Republicans did, I don't know how long this democracy could handle two parties operating that way. So there could be a little bit of fear in the Democratic Party to actually play hardball because they know they're dealing with ideological terrorists on the other side of the aisle.
I mean, that is, you know, we've seen that in the past where certainly during like the fiscal cliff situation under the Obama administration, mm-hmm. notion of like they're holding the hostages and they don't care. Like, you know, like Democrats, it is incumbent upon Democrats to even maintain the slightest, I guess, hint of being Democrats that they perceive government as being able to do something. And if you destroy it, it doesn't go anywhere. But from your perspective, as somebody from Georgia, Ossoff and Warnock, they seem to be, and not necessarily that their politics are ideologically, you know, more to the left, although maybe arguably they are than one would have expected for two senators from Georgia. But from a partisan standpoint, from a perspective of willing to fight and recognize what's going on the other side, they seem to be of cut from a different cloth than a lot of other Democrats, particularly ones you would imagine coming from what we consider should be a reddish purple state.
Right. I think that, you know, I think Warnock and Ossoff are operating based on the knowledge of the change that happened in Georgia over the last, since really longer than since the gubernatorial race with Stacey Abrams, but certainly after that, there's been such an uptick in registrations that Georgia isn't solidly blue, but it's moving in that direction. And I feel like maybe they're operating based on the assumption that Georgia is going to continue moving that direction, because it is something that you wouldn't expect from, like you wouldn't expect this from Doug Jones over in Alabama. Right. Well, I mean, he's not there now, but you know what I mean? Like, I think they're operating based on the assumption that Georgia is going to continue moving blue. But then also, if we just, you know, look at Warnock and his the Black liberation religious tradition that he comes from, he's one of those people. He was going to go up there and speak truth to power no matter what. I just hope it continues.
Right. So apparently I'm being told that Trump's lawyer just called the impeachment trial constitutional cancel culture.
CCC, right? I think he probably had another.
We have this clip. Let's play this clip. This is just, I mean, this is like the, you know, I mean, Donald Trump has been the talk radiofication. I want to say like the circle has closed. Let's put it that way. I mean, it has been going on for years. Rush Limbaugh is about to sign off permanently, it sounds like. And but he is the one who sort of unleashed this on America, frankly. Here's that clip.
In effect, Congress would be claiming that the right to disqualify a private citizen, no longer a government official, from running for public office. This would transform the solemn impeachment process into a mechanism for asserting congressional control over which private citizens are and are not allowed to run for president. In short, this unprecedented effort is not about Democrats opposing political violence. It is about Democrats trying to disqualify their political opposition. It is constitutional cancel culture. History will record this shameful effort as a deliberate attempt by the Democrat Party to smear, censor, and cancel not just President Trump, but the 75 million Americans who voted for him.
You know, this is, it's conservative aggrievement. I want to say 2.0, but it's really like 25.0, right? I mean, this has been, we've seen this, you know, in so many iterations, but their argument is that, despite the fact that the Senate has already ruled on the jurisdiction in this instance, and this is a political process. Democrats, you know, he's arguing they'll pay a political price if he is kept from running again. Well, okay, but that's not a defense.
Right.
Now you're just like analyzing what the outcome of the trial could be. I mean, what's your sense?
No, that's exactly right. He's saying, I don't like the potential outcome of this. Therefore, we should not go through with this. But that's enough for Republicans to justify not voting to convict Donald Trump. So their job, a lot of times, the propagandists, whether it be Fox News or whether it be his defense attorneys, their one job is to give conservatives a glimmer of hope, something that they can hang on to when nothing else is there. And I think they're going to run with this constitutional cancel culture. That's going to be the talking point for a while.
Yeah. I mean, maybe years, Frank. I mean, this is what's interesting about this is, And it's early, right? I mean, it's early in the Biden administration. But what I'm starting to see the outlines of are two parties, one that is engaging in, let's put the Democrats aside for a moment. The Republicans do not seem to be engaging. You know, like we've had this quality where, you know, Fox News started to create a second media narrative, right? Mm-hmm. That is moving along. When I started doing this 15, 20 years ago, the idea was like, okay, Fox tries to promote something. It gets into Drudge. Drudge sort of like is the gateway to get it into like the network news and cable news, because a lot of those producers would look at this stuff. And that was what the plan was then. Over the past 4 or 5 years, 6 years, maybe 7 years, 8 years, it's been growing in this fashion since Limbaugh launched in 88 or 90, that this narrative is now running parallel. These two media narratives are running parallel and they don't need to combine. And it also, now it feels like that's happening with the governance by these different political parties. Like the Republicans are not engaging in the COVID relief whatsoever. A couple of them went over and said, here's something that we know you're going to reject. And that's it. There's no, there doesn't, there seems to be two tracks that are going on in terms of the way that our governance is going.
Yeah, no. And it actually parallels like reality versus fiction, right? There's this parallel world that they've created in order to give themselves some kind of solace, because they absolutely, Republicans, conservatives know that their ideology just does not work in the real world. That doesn't matter. We have a propaganda machine that can create an alternate reality. And so likewise, like, we have it not only in media, we have it in public office now, because there's no political price to pay so long as they can get enough votes to win.
Well, that's the point, right? Like, they don't even have, like, there's no argument of, you barely hear them talking about even the deficit. You barely hear them talking about we need more tax credits or whatever it is. There's no, they don't even seem to be offering anything for that, and they don't seem to need it. Fox News is not sitting there going, talking about the deficit or in any real way or any of the sort of like governance talking points. It is all just about cancel culture or, right. You know, they'll do 45 minutes on the lawyer. The cat video, because they're just like, they're just living in a completely different world. It's fascinating.
Yeah, the cat video was the best time spent on Fox News in the last however long they've been in existence. But no, I mean, but to your point, man, it really has become it's become such a hermetically sealed bubble. Right. This echo chamber is now so perfectly sealed that they have no responsibility to even take care of the material conditions of their listeners, because they can give them everything else to be a distraction, including the bigotry, including the white supremacy, including the fear of cancel culture, including the war on Christmas, whenever that comes back around. Like, they have found their toolkit to always engage with their audience outside of reality.
Even calling it constitutional cancel culture is really just like sort of appealing to that that entire sort of narrative of aggrievement that the conservatives feel. And it's all simply a cultural argument.
Right. Right. And if you actually go to the logical conclusion of their arguments, then they also have to conclude that those rioters, those treasonous insurrectionist terrorists that marched up the steps have a constitutional right to overthrow this government. Right. They're not going to take it there, because who cares about logic and logical extensions of their arguments? All they care about is setting the framework that they need to defend Donald Trump's honor and to keep getting the clicks and the views that Fox News needs.
I wonder if that's where they go next. Frankly, I mean, honestly,
I would be surprised.
All right. I want to play this clip of Sheldon Whitehouse, senator from Rhode Island. And this is interesting because, you know, like we started off in this conversation, there was some skepticism about the both the sort of the functioning of the Senate if you hold impeachment. And also, will there be a political price? Will looking back and not moving forward, will that cost the Democrats? I hear Sheldon Whitehouse say this type of thing, and it sounds to me like they're realizing, actually, no, this is actually helpful politically. This is clip number three.
Senator, I want to ask you about something you said last night and give you an opportunity to sort of clarify. Senators Cruz, Senators Holly, you told Lawrence O'Donnell last night on our air that there may have been, shall we say, some, I don't know, reluctance by some Republicans to create a delay long enough to allow that mob to make their way in. What did you mean by that? You weren't suggesting that some of your Republican colleagues were complicit, were you?
That is what the Senate Ethics Committee needs to look at. And I hope that they do a thorough job of looking into it. Because we cannot count on the FBI and other investigative groups to look at the conduct of senators, because senators are protected by the speech and debate clause from a lot of investigation. So it's on us as the Senate to make sure we fully understand what our colleagues were up to. But when the president is calling a senator and asking him to delay further the legitimate process of certification so that the mob can interrupt that process, that's a pretty compelling statement by the President of the United States. And it opens a very important line of inquiry for the Ethics Committee.
You're talking about that phone call to Senator Turbeville?
Correct.
Is the Ethics Committee, Senator, launching an investigation into this? Or is this something that you think should happen?
They've been asked to. The letter has been received. Seven senators signed that letter. And as best I can tell, they're in the initial process of reviewing whether to open the matter and go forward with a full and formal investigation.
Well, the Ethics Committee used to be evenly divided.
I mean, that's a pretty serious, well, it's not quite an accusation, but it is a an insinuation that there was more. I mean, you know, there's a reason why Rudy Giuliani is calling these people saying, you know, we just need a little bit more time. And it's probably because he feels like he can. Like, they've all been briefed about what was going to happen. And the idea was, I mean, the reason why Donald Trump wanted to have that rally was there was in some way to influence the outcome of that vote, or maybe even the taking of that vote, depending on which way he thought it was going to go.
Yeah, and so this is actually pretty bold. Like, I do like to see this coming from Democrats. Like, for Democrats, it is a pretty bold move. And it needs to be done because the underlying accusations are, I mean, I know you've discussed this ad nauseum, right? This is a serious thing that we're dealing with. They literally tried to overthrow our democracy. My only hesitation with that clip is that it seemed like the media was a little more hesitant to actually take it there than the senator, because, you know, honestly, the competing narratives there, we have at a minimum, Sam, there has to be competing narratives when you have one from Fox News that is complete alternate reality. We can't be timid in terms of our leaders or our media in calling a thing and identifying the real problem. So it was good to see that clip from a politician's point of view, but then also the hesitance. I feel like the media is still in that world where they aren't sure yet in that exchange whether or not they should put the hammer down in terms of the narrative. No, this is a serious accusation. We're talking about the whole thing here. They could have effectively overthrown our democracy that day, and the president was a part of it. So, of course, there need to be investigations at every level of this.
That point that you're making about the sort of the more mainstream media, if you will, and you know, that's a clip from MSNBC. It's obviously associated with being a more liberal than let's say, well, certainly than Fox,
right?
You know, arguably with CNN. But the point being is that I think there is a reflexive impulse by the media at this moment to say the same thing that Biden said, that Obama said, like, the fever's going to break.
No.
One of the things about this impeachment that I think is extremely helpful for those of us who want the Democrats to use every arrow in their quiver.
Yeah.
To provide material benefit for people, particularly during a pandemic, but more broadly speaking. And to do it without having to sort of, you know, bow to some false sense of bipartisanship where it doesn't exist. I think it's helpful that the media sees that, like, hey, you know, remember Lindsey Graham, who you thought was such a, you know, sort of a bipartisan maverick? Well, look at him now. Right. I mean, all of them. Like, I think it's almost as important of a lesson for these folks. And sadly, because the Democrats respond so much to them generally, right, to teach them that, like, look, there's no partner here. There's no way for you to mold the Republicans into the party you want them to be.
Right. And if you think about it, like, we just simply cannot have a functioning, first of all, the propaganda that comes from mainstream media in general is the bane of our democracy, right? But if you have two competing narratives, one that is in complete la la land and fiction, Fox News, you can't have the counterbalance be people are like, oh, are we sure we want to investigate that? No, like, we've already lost.
Right. Right. It's an interesting point. All right, let's turn to what took place in terms of the COVID relief this week. There was obviously a lot of, and I think we should probably stipulate up front, I mean, I think that you agree that and particularly being from Georgia, to not just say $2,000 check at this point is just sort of like a complete unforced error. The reports are that we're talking about a $45 billion difference. I know that's weird math for people in terms of going from 1,400 to 2 million, excuse me, to 2,000. Because some of this is going to be clawed back with taxes and whatnot, that it ultimately would have been just like a $45 billion on a $1.9 trillion bill. But you don't have the ability to say the $2,000 check. With that said, the House passed the $1,400 at the same threshold level as the past checks. So nobody who got checks before are not going to get some. And they expanded it by having adult dependents also covered, which is, you know, several million people. So there's more money going out the door. And it turns out there's not going to be this threshold. What's your sense of that? And Biden apparently supports that.
Yeah, so this is the interesting thing. I think Democrats know the same thing Republicans know when it comes to the American people. And this is in no way, form, or fashion to insult the American people. But when you are so desperate for help, you'll be glad to get that $1,400 check. And I think that's what Democrats are counting on. They're counting on paying the political price right now, but they know when the $1,400 lands in the banks of whoever gets it, people are going to be grateful. But I think that's more of a testament to how broken Americans are. Like really at this juncture, I'll say that for my show. Cause I mean, to me, this is a complete abdication of their responsibility.
No, go tell.
Listen, I'm going to be honest with you. At this juncture, the fact that who are the Democrats trying to pacify here? Like who are they saving this $600 for? Right. Because if Republicans did this, we would be up in arms. We would run political ads against Republicans for this exact move. So I want to know who they're trying to help here. Right. Because it doesn't. It's a rounding error in a $1.9 trillion. Come on. I mean, $45 billion is a lot. But in the $1.9 trillion bill, it is a rounding error. So my question is, who are they trying to help here? Because it's not the American people. They're counting on the American people being so broken that we'll be happy to see that $1,400 check. And I know everybody will be happy to see that $1,400 check. But still, I mean, it's just a testament to how broken we are as American citizens.
It's so bizarre because you hear every time now you hear anybody talk about any of the Democratic politicians talk about the $1,400. They feel compelled to remind everybody about the $600 that came in December. We saw Chuck Schumer out today, and I'm just talking as a political matter, right? Although I think there is a very good argument from a financial matter. But let's just talk from just a strictly a political matter. If you're out there and you're having to say $1,400 check, and then you're saying, and also, of course, we want credit for the $600 that you got under Donald Trump as well. And, or Chuck Schumer's out there going, you know, $1,400 check, and then talking about all the other programs in there and saying, you know, family of four is going to get 8,000. I don't know what the specific number is. And I'm talking here as a political matter. You can see they feel compelled to cover for that. So there's an awareness amongst Democratic politicians that this is a deficiency, and no one can come out and explain
why.
Why?
Why? Who is this? Like, why? Like, if there is a valid reason, make your case. But if you do not have a valid reason and you're shortchanging people who have been struggling for a year now, like they're people who started quarantining a year ago, right? And we've gotten maybe two checks, and as opposed to other nations that don't have a fraction of our wealth being able to support their citizens through the entirety of the pandemic. The Democrats need an answer for this. And don't get me wrong, let's get the checks out to the people, because a lot of people need that $1,400 right now. Let's not hold it up. Let's do it. But at the end of the day, Democrats need an answer for this.
Yeah, it's just I just for, as a political matter, it's ridiculous. Here is a clip of Dave Ramsey. This guy is an evangelical money advisor, if you will, to millions of Americans on radio. He has a massive radio show. He's been on for years. He basically tells people, if you are in debt, if you have lost your job, it is because there is a moral failing within you. And here he is going on Fox and making that case about the $1,400 check.
Well, to start with, we need to understand we got $1.7 trillion in student loan debt. $192 billion out of that Not so much. Let's do some ratios, folks. If we're going to do math, we probably ought to play math. Now, on top of that, when you dig into it, the whole idea that student loans being forgiven is going to stimulate the economy, that assumes that people were getting ready to pay them off this year and instead would use that same $40,000 that they were getting ready to pay off their student loan and stimulate the economy with it. Again, that's economic hogwash. It's smoke and mirrors. It's simply not going to happen.
Dave, I just think there's a moral hazard doing this.
Absolutely.
You signed a financial contract. You have an obligation to pay that money back.
Absolutely. And well, listen, there's some situations where folks are hurting, and this thing has become, it's gotten completely out of hand.
Yeah.
I mean, there are people's lives who have been destroyed by this program. Somebody needs some relief somewhere. I'm fine with that. But this has nothing to do with really helping people. This is a political gimme by progressives simply trying to buy votes. And we know that because when you go from $10,000 in forgiveness to $50,000 in forgiveness, the people who benefit are not lower income people. The vast majority of people that have an average income or less have less than $10,000 in student loan debt. Mm-hmm. The vast majority of people who would be blessed by moving it from 10 to 50 are high income earners. So again, this is all political rhetoric.
You know,
it's not reality.
You come from an interesting perspective. You talk to Americans across the country every day on your radio program.
Yeah.
What do you believe is the right number or the right answer for the next stimulus check?
Well, I don't believe in a stimulus check, because if $600 or $1,400 changes your life, you were pretty much screwed already. You got other issues going on. You have a career problem. You have a debt problem. You have a relationship problem. You have a mental health problem. Something else is going on if $600 changes your life. And that's not talking down to folks. I've been bankrupt. I've been broken. I work with people every day who are hurting. I love people. I want people to be lifted up. But this is, again, it is just political rhetoric, and it's just throwing dollars out there. It's peeing on a forest fire. It's absolutely ridiculous.
All right. There's so much here that is offensive and needs. Do you want to take the first crack at it? And because I know we're both chomping at the bit for this.
I don't know. I mean, I've had the unfortunate privilege of covering this. This would be my third time talking about this guy, a millionaire, multi-billion. I mean, so rich that he doesn't understand how many people need $600. Right. Let's forget about the $1,400. The $600 could save somebody's life right now, right? To be able to make that statement and then blame it on mental health and blame it and like say it's pissing on a forest fire. Like get your analogy straight, because you're right. $600 at $2,000 is insufficient, right, to address the issues that Americans are facing. But he's also saying don't give Americans anything. And so it's just coming from a place of that hermetically sealed bubble that we're talking about. Fox News can forward this agenda, this narrative, and their followers are going to listen to it and believe it, even though they themselves need that $600 to just be able to feed their own kids. And so it just speaks to how broken America is, man. American citizens, I mean, even if you split it down ideologically, right, we're broken. If you look at us all together, we're broken, because there's absolutely no way this government should have been able to get away with what it's gotten away with through this pandemic.
You know, this is Ramsey trying to have his moment that the guy on the commodities exchange floor in Chicago, I can't remember his name.
Yes, I remember that.
Who kicked off the Tea Party movement as blaming people who had gotten into fraudulent mortgages, et cetera, et cetera. But there's a couple of things I want to address about Ramsey. First off, the idea that student debt would not stimulate the economy is just simply wrong. You can go and you can Google the American Home Builders Association president, who can tell you that the number one reason for slow home starts is because people are saddled with that debt. If I've got a $50,000 bill I've got to pay, even if I'm paying $400 or $500 a month, I'm not going to take a mortgage. I'm not going to qualify for a mortgage, frankly. For a house, so I'm not going to go out and buy a house. I might not be able to buy a car because I don't want the extra $200-$300 payment a month for that car, because I got a $500-$700 a month payment. You've got people I've interviewed on this program, a woman who had $25,000 worth of debt. Within 5 years, it was $50,000 from college. I mean, you know, where half of it is interest. He's wrong about the economics of this. He's just blatantly wrong about it. And then they start talk about moral hazard. This is a guy who, by his own admission, has been bankrupt, declared bankruptcy at least once. Now, for people who don't know what that means, debt forgiveness.
You can't talk about moral hazard of having people who are saddled with debt that virtually did not even exist. That type of debt did not exist when he went to college. Didn't need it because colleges are far less expensive. You could also discharge that debt if you had it in bankruptcy when he declared bankruptcy. And now they're out there, he's shutting the barn door and saying, this is a moral hazard if we allow for this type of debt. It is astonishing. And this is really all they have. And it's going to be interesting to see, because when Frank Santelli got on the floor of the Chicago Commodities Exchange, said, like, we're not paying off their mortgages. It led to the immiseration of millions of people who ultimately dealt with foreclosure, and an anemic attempt by the Obama administration, who was concerned about that moral hazard. They rolled out HAMP. It was a horrible program for homeowners. It saved the banks. And then we got Donald Trump. And so it's going to be interesting to see how people react to this type of proclamation from Ramsey.
I think that the difference here is that we're in a pandemic, and I hope my I've been saying all episodes so far is that Americans are broken, right? That's the only way I can understand this and process it, right? But I hope that maybe the pendulum is swinging in the other direction, because I think for him to just very straightforward to say that if you need $600, then something's wrong with you. I hope that is at least jarring enough to somebody who's literally trying to figure out how to feed their kids, even if they are conservative. I hope it's enough to actually start swinging the pendulum back in the other direction. I hope that this is resoundingly rejected. I think that it will be, but conservatives never cease to amaze me. So let's see how they accept this.
If people want to read more about Dave Ramsey, you can find more at RNS, I think it is. It's the Religious News Service. Did a big piece on him just about a month ago, January 15th, 2021, written by Bob Smantana. Ramsey's place to work, not necessarily the best place to work, but Helene Olin also wrote a great book on these type of advisors. And this is sort of interesting, because like the idea that their agenda is to isolate your situation and say the reason why you are struggling financially is because of you, a moral failing of some form, whatever he went through the litany of them. Something's going on, whether you got drugs or you got whatever it is, as opposed to a systemic problem in society that we do not provide enough of the nation's wealth for people to live a bare existence, as it were, right? And that is their agenda. Make you, the individual, feel like it's your fault so that you don't start questioning, like, hey, wait a second, how come Canada, you just dial into the phone and it's easier than, you know, checking, you know, how much you owe for your credit card, you get unemployment. How come we have, you know, mechanisms to distribute healthcare at other countries? I mean, all of that. And that's the way they do it.
And because the way they pull it off is that they have defined for conservatives patriotism to reflect more of what marched up the steps of the Capitol on January 6th. Right. Then being the people who can look at America and say, America, we have to do better. There's really no excuse for us to not take care of our citizens when everybody else, every other country in this, on the face of this planet, is probably doing a better job than Americans are. So what they have had to do is redefine personal responsibility. They have had to redefine patriotism, and they have found this nice little niche that allows them to define what being a real American is a type of person who would allow the wealthy to be wealthy without having any responsibility to all the systemic problems that come as a result of capitalism. That's how they have meticulously groomed the definition of patriotism. And that's the sole function of Fox News and all these propagandist outlets.
Couldn't have said it better, Ben. Benjamin Dixon, the host of the Benjamin Dixon Show. Where can people find you? Do like five different shows, right?
Yeah.
They
can find me right here on YouTube, the Benjamin Dixon Show, and we have the morning show, all the stuff that we're doing there. You can find me here or on Facebook.
All right. Well, Ben, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Sam. Thanks for having me.
Folks, we're going to take a quick break here for a second. Just a reminder, if you missed any part of this show, you can see it replay at 5 p.m. and 10 p.m. on the Peacock app. Just look up the Choice Channel, or you can just search for the Majority Report. You find it there. We're there every day, 5 p.m., 10 p.m., and there's a video on demand. What do they call that now? Video on demand? You can there's
VOD.
There's an archive. There's an archive for the past couple of days if you missed any part of the show. Quick break. We'll be right back with more. But you got a couple of minutes here. I just wanted to, you know, there was one thing that came up, and it's interesting. We reported there earlier this week that Chicago has finally made a deal with the Chicago Teachers Union to provide what is needed in terms of keeping teachers and students safe when they go back to school. We hear a lot of reports out there of kids being able to go to schools and transmission numbers being low. But there is something that's really, I think, important that people understand when they hear these stories. The New York Times had a piece out today. 175 pediatric disease experts, it's safe to open elementary schools. And it is, they asked 175 pediatric infectious disease experts what standards matter. And here's what they said. They do not think vaccinating teachers or students is, according to Margot Sanger Katz, a reporter at the Times, writes, they do not think vaccinating teachers or students is important. They do not think schools should close based on community spread of virus. By large margins, they think schools can open in person with masks and distancing and ventilation. The problem is that we have not had the resources given to schools, broadly speaking, to make sure that there are masks, to make sure that there is enough room for proper distancing, and certainly providing ventilation. It is not sufficient to send kids to school, particularly in the Northeast, other parts that are cold, with the windows open. And so the real problem here is that whether it's Chicago or anywhere else, they are pushing teachers to go into situations that are not safe. You can do school if you provide the resources to make it safe, and we do not have those resources. So, you know, Chicago teachers go in. I don't know if that Chicago classroom is going to be safe. I've seen pictures of what they do in Philadelphia for. It's just fans in the windows. That's not proper ventilation. And frankly, all the polls show that people support the teachers staying out. So, all right, that's it for us. We'll be back on Monday. See you then. Unless you're sticking around. And in which case, if you are, we will, we've got another guest for you. Do we have him? Do we have David?
Yes, we do. Here he comes.
Great. Folks, don't forget, it's your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. And now it is my pleasure to welcome back to the program the writer. I don't think you're the writer. You're a writer at The Defector.
Yes.
Only writer at The Defector.
I'm the only writer that's conventionally handsome at The Defector.
Exactly where I was going with that. We'll let on the show, as far as I know.
Yeah, but there's a lot of other, like, almost everyone else looks like Adam Driver. So some people are really into it, and some people are like, why is the lower part of his head so big? I've got the symmetry, as viewers can see.
I'm looking at you now, and I'm realizing, like, it's a good.
Go on.
We have slightly different glasses.
Yeah. No, this is like, it's an age progression that basically, like, this is like, I'm the left half of like a glow up. And then they're like, if you start using better conditioner, and then you are directly to my right.
Right. There you go. Exactly. I mean, there's certain like inevitability. I feel like I walk around, I see like every day, like 12 guys who look like exactly like me.
Yeah, I got roasted for this on the NFL like stream that we do on Twitch. Tyler, Ricky Tynes of The Ringer, terrific writer. I like changed into a shirt because I'm like expected to wear like a shirt with a collar on it. And he was like, you look like you should be reading ads on a NPR program. You look like Ira Glass. And I was like, all right, cool, let's roll. But, you know, I can't argue with him. Like, I look like I'm trying to look like Ira Glass. And I don't even know that I'm not.
Yeah, no. I mean, I go through the same thing, believe me. I mean, even with my family members, they confuse me with Ira Glass.
Yeah.
All right, let's go into this.
Okay.
Enough of this, David.
Enough about my looks.
You have, I don't know if you spent the last 4 years doing this, but you certainly have spent the last couple that I've been aware of, really examining the sort of cultural aspects of what is going on with the conservative movement in this country, if you could say that on some level, and sort of the lunacy that has been happening. Give me your sense of like what, I don't know, what is it, what are you been following impeachment?
A little bit. I haven't been watching it. I find that I can't really pay attention to it closely. Like it's sort of, I don't know if that's my mind going or if it's my mind like improving and developing, but either way, it's kind of just like, I don't know, the third through fifth innings of an August baseball game to me. It's the same energy level for that. I have, you know, enjoyed the highlights, which I guess is like the president's attorneys getting up there and doing Lionel Hutz things. But there hasn't been, I feel like in a lot of ways, like everybody else, like I sort of know what I'm seeing and what I'm going to expect from it. And if I thought that there was, I mean, not even just a legal argument to make on Trump's behalf, if I thought that they would bother making such an argument, I think I would be more curious to see it. But it's all at this point, like there's three moves, you know, that sort of political and intellectual movement makes, you know, which are like feints, taunts, and then like attempts to sort of like get in people's asses and sort of put them off like strategically. And there's nothing new with that, you know, and I don't need to see it in with that like senatorial energy level that helps you.
But do you think that there is, I mean, there's no qualitative difference, but do you think that we're moving further? Like when you write about like American kookery, right? I mean, it feels like to me, and maybe part of it is Facebook. I mean, you know, you wrote a piece about Steve Carlton and sort of comparing him to Kurt.
Yeah, it's wildly unfair to Steve Carlton, who, for one thing, was really good at his job.
I mean, look, I it's difficult for me because I grew up with the Red Sox not winning anything. And then, you know, Curt Schilling was an integral part to that first time they won the series. And it's difficult to look back on that now. But
it's weird. I think he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame on his merits. It's an incredible testament to his particular brain damage. And then also, I think this is what I was trying to do in the piece, like the general drift of like what it means to be a conservative person. Cause like in 2001, he was a McCain sounding guy that like after like September 11th, Schilling wrote an open letter to the country that was like, boy, did they pick the wrong country, but we're so honored to be out there standing up for you. And especially the first responders, like it's paint by numbers. Right. And now the guy like compulsively has posted himself out of the Hall of Fame, like out of something that he deserves on its merits, because he can't stop doing tweets.
But that's my point is that you're seeing that this progression, like, the, you know, qualitatively it's changed, but it's also sort of like quantitatively. I don't know if there's some type of like quanta quality, like it is become, I mean, I was describing this with Ben just a moment ago, that it used to be like there was the right would try and infect the mainstream by, you know, going through Fox, going through Drudge, and then getting it into the mainstream news. But now you have two parallel narratives that seem to be able to coexist without necessarily having them, you know, intersect. And to when they do, it's just for conflict
purposes.
And on top of which, It's starting to feel like maybe it's a concentric circle. Like, I'm looking around and it's not just there's a mass insanity that seems to be taking hold in this country that is both conservative and, like, you know, all the Q stuff, which I think is sort of like conservative adjacent or something.
Yeah, it's another way to sort of, like, the Q thing to me is like, it's both complicated and it's not, because it's like, in some ways, it's the logical endpoint of, like, some really sort of thoughtless rhetoric that we've been dealing with over the course of, I mean, not just 20 years, but I think a lot of this is like post September 11th, that was like a deranging moment for our politics and the culture, like, for obvious reasons. Like, it was extremely upsetting, you know, like, it's not the sort of thing that you could say, like, is being overreacted to. It's just that, like, the vulnerability that was exposed to that, and then I think also these sorts of levels of complicity, and then watching all of these different sorts of public failures, that, like, that doesn't, it's impossible to deny, and yet the narrative that, you know, America is, you know, the beacon of democracy and the essential country and all of the whatever other rhetoric there is, that sort of just continues on apace. And so, like, as you watch those two things drift apart, it's natural to want to try to sort of square that circle. And then if you are immersed in conservative media, like, which I think, you know, in, it's not like you can say that Rush Limbaugh was, like, underground or whatever, but, like, I don't listen to him. I don't really know what he's saying unless, like, somebody clips something really bad and puts it online. But you spend 20 years or 30 years painting the milquetoast, objectively milquetoast political opposition in the country as, like, sort of a fifth column, and as, like, the tools of elites and all of this other sorts of language that I don't know how thoughtful any of that was. I don't think that anybody really considered what it would be like to just have that hydrant blasting 24/7 for a couple of decades. But at some point, people are going to start to believe it. And where you wind up then is in a space where I think that, like, Democrats have a romantic idea of what, not all, but many have a romantic idea of what the Republican Party is or could be, you know, that, like, we disagree on a lot of stuff, but we're friends and we all want the right thing. Right. And I think that increasingly that's not the case from the other side of the aisle, not just, you know, if it was originally a rhetorical thing, if it was originally like trying to steepen, you know, the importance of a choice that, you know, really wasn't that important to begin with, or to sort of heighten a contradiction that wasn't there. Like, once that's out of play, then you're basically just saying the things that get the best response. And I feel like that's kind of where we are now with a lot of this stuff, that, like, even the people that, you know, I'm trying to think of, like, James Lankford from Oklahoma, like, apparently was, like, tearing up during the, you know, the videos showing, like, Eugene Goodman saving Mitt Romney's life or whatever, or, like, just even seeing how bad that really was. And, like, I think that's a real response. I just think that, like, fundamentally, that's not a circuit that he's capable of closing. Like, not just because he's afraid to keep his job, and he knows that, like, if he votes against Trump, that a lot of people who care more about Trump than him would be mad. But I think that, like, it's just that, like, the politics itself doesn't work anymore, that, like, nobody can really make a choice other than the one that the rest of their party is making. And so that vacuum where there should be politics happening is being filled with bullshit.
I just saw a poll that showed, like, that compared Democrats' perspective on Republicans and Republicans on Democrats. Do you consider them a political rival or an enemy?
Enemy, yeah, I saw that, which is,
it was like 75% of Republicans view Democrats as the enemy. It's the opposite with Democrats, like, something. I don't remember the specific breakdown, but that was the dynamic.
It was a striking thing. And I remember being struck by the word enemy on it, too, because I think some of it is, like, just how people like to respond to polls, that's just, like, the way that conservative politics talks right now, is this, like, incredibly strident, kind of overstated, like, Trump scented way of doing it, where it's like, you know, if Biden wins, you won't have a country anymore, whatever. Like, when Trump says that, what he's doing is, like, playing this game of telephone where, like, that's his memory of what the last thing Lou Dobbs said to him was.
Right.
Right. And, like, it doesn't necessarily make any sense, but he's not thinking about it. He's not thinking about what that would mean. And yet, like, where that gets taken seriously, like when people hear that and they're like, oh my God, like we're going to fucking lose our country for real. Like that can happen. Like at some point, like you can't blame them for believing what the president is saying. You can actually, I would personally blame them, but you can't, like, you're supposed to be more careful with the words that you use so that people don't start thinking of your political rivals as people that deserve to be lynched outside their workplace.
Right. And for Trump, I mean, it was just like, whoa, people are responding to that. That must be, keep saying it.
And that's absolutely, I think that that's like the secret to like what, to the extent that he's going to have an influence on our politics, like I hope that he personally will go away. I don't know that we're going to be lucky enough for that. But like the thing that's going to be kept from his years is people noticing that. And like not just in terms of the like backbench buttheads that just think their job is posting, you know, like there's a few of those and like that's annoying. But like Marjorie Taylor Greene is not going to write a law that takes healthcare away from people. Like that's not what she sees her gig as being. She vote for it.
I got to say, though, I think we would need to reconvene in 15 years.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I worry all the time that I'm whistling past the graveyard with this. I mean, not just that she's going to be president, but like if that's really what politics is going to be now is like trying to like cut wrestling promos and then just like fucking off to your office to raise money. Like that's grim. Like nothing happens then.
Well, I mean, I have to say that it goes slowly, but that's been the progression. I mean, you know, you know, like you and I could have had this conversation 15 years ago about like this state legislator in Indiana or that. And now we're talking about Congress people.
Yeah.
Now we're talking about the president of the United States. I mean, these guys don't go away. There does not seem, I mean, look, Marjorie Taylor Greene, how much money has she raised in the past 2 weeks? Millions at this point and at least hundreds of thousands. And this is someone who's not even on a committee. She can't do anything.
I know. I mean, like, she's basically there to post now. Like, she's officially there to post.
There's nothing she can do. And yet, there's all the incentive in the world for her to keep doing it. I mean, look at how long Sarah Palin glided after she quit her job as governor of like that's it. The idea that you would quit your job as governor of Alaska because you can do more for the country as just
by appearing on TV, by going to like snowmobile conventions. Yeah.
Show like and but the you know, it took like 3 or 4 years. And God knows what other factors that basically took her out of the limelight. I mean, you know, Donald Trump's ascension basically pushed her out a little bit. But people forget, like, she was filling those arenas for years after, you know, through 2009, 2010, 2011, you know, maybe up to 12. And
I think this is where the future kind of is for these people is being like touring acts. Like being like whatever the version of, you know, there's like a version of Journey. And then there's also like Steve Perry playing Journey songs. And like, they try not to overlap on the circuit because like they can't stand each other. Like, that's basically where all of this, I think, is heading. It's like this sort of like a purely theatrical performance of grievance. But like also the performance itself, like they're not playing like Wheel in the Sky. They're playing like we should do genocide against people, like which is not great.
No, it's not great because the problem is that to expand your metaphor, there is
the new Journey songs,
massive radio station or, you know, Spotify service that feeds off of these tourers. And they just happen to also more often or not have a huge advantage in their ability to control the Senate or. Yeah. The you know and that's the problem. There's a couple of these things I wanted to play for you that I think capture some of what we're talking about. Here is yesterday, One America News.
Oh, I love them.
Aired a tribute to Donald Trump and
easily one of our six best cable news channels.
And this I want to get your take on it because you know you're. You're very literate, obviously, and okay. as cultured as you are. I thought maybe you could give us a sense of how we should absorb this. This is on Thursday.
Oh, I like this one.
Well, despite endless lies and attacks from Democrats in the media, President Trump and the administration fought for the country over the past 4 years. And now the network would like to share this tribute to his accomplishments. Take a look.
If by Rudyard Kipling, if you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowance for their doubting too, if you can wait and not be tired by waiting, or being lied about, don't deal in lies, or being hated, don't give way to hating, and yet don't look too good, nor talk too wise. If you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two impostors just the same, if you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things you gave your life to broken and stoop and build them up with worn-out tools, if you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it on one turn of pitch and toss, and lose and start again at your beginnings and never breathe a word about your loss, if you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve
a word
your turn
your
long after they are gone,
the
and so hold
Trump
on
trade.
When there is nothing in you except the will which says to them, hold on. If you can talk with crowds and keep
this
your
is so me.
Or walk with kings, nor lose the common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you, but are none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything. And, which is more, you'll be a man, my son.
So, before we get into the actual text of this, I want to point out that this concept is ripped off from a fan video, a tribute to Arsene Wenger, the soccer coach.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, from like 2013. Ishan Thor sent it to me yesterday. That one's a little bit better because Wenger's a lot better at walking than Trump is. Like, I feel like they had to scour like some crazy, you know, like Errol Morris years of footage thing just to find like 15 second clip of him walking across a tarmac where he's not canted at a 45 degree angle somehow.
I can imagine like the editor or the production assistant getting the orders for this. Just get every single shot that we have of Donald Trump waving or walking.
Yeah, if there's a thing where he's looking at a helicopter, we want that. If he's waving to the helicopter, also good. If he's hugging or kissing the helicopter, you're going to want to run that up the chain to make sure that it's appropriate.
I couldn't help but listen to that poem by Rudyard Kipling and thinking maybe you should also have maybe there should have been a poem. What if you can't?
Right. I mean, it's what's funny about it is the poem itself
are none of the things that he can do.
They're all the opposite of the thing. I mean, that's the part of it that I love is like it gets funnier the more solemn it becomes, as it's sort of like the idea of being like, if you could lose and never speak a word of your loss, and you're like, oh right, like Trump does, the guy that
would not be Donald Trump, that's yeah. What would happen if
the guy that can't refer to the dude that beat him as the president and calls him former Vice President Biden, like fucking Woody Hayes calling Michigan the northern rival or whatever, like how childish could that be?
Oh my gosh.
The guy that made the video too. It's funny. One America News, like that's just like a tweet that they saw that they put on TV. Like they didn't make that. Some like weird Twitter dude who like linked to info where that Harrison Smith guy that's up or whatever his name is, Harrison of Texas. That's not like an in-house production of One America News, which you can tell because like it's like it doesn't look like it's in a Verhoeven movie. Like it looks like it's in a Zack Snyder movie, but it's the same. It's a different sort of energy.
That I didn't realize. They seem to take credit for it, though.
Yeah, well, they're kind of like, we just wanted to share this with you. That's like, I guess, during technically a news block, too, for them. That's not like during the... I don't know what their opinion shows are like. I mean, is it just like...
It's not, I mean, you know...
Just a police officer crying inconsolably for 1 hour?
I mean, I could knock them for putting that on their program, but I just played their thing.
Well, it's beautiful. Yeah. You don't have to agree with the perspective to respect it as art.
Yeah, it's true. I'm going to confess that I had to hold back the tears.
Yeah. Do you think that is actually how the people that most solemnly admire Trump see him? I've been going over that in my mind.
A doubt. My whole perspective on the modern conservative mind is that it is just about aggrievement. It is just about
agreement.
And because there is such a John Benjamin, when we were younger, had a joke that he talked about that he was like, I would love to live in an oppressive regime because it would justify my feelings of oppression. And on some level, like, I think, like, there is such an aggrievement felt that I think is like constitutional, not big concept, but literally just
like emotional.
There's nothing left after, there's nothing but a 5 o'clock shadow after, after you take out the aggrievement from the conservative mind. And to feed that aggrievement, to maintain that, they feel constantly aggrieved by everything.
Yeah.
I'm on the phone, press 2 for Spanish. My God, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Well, like that, like all of this, they're a constant feeling of being under siege. And just the fact that they can make it through the day is they have to impart to themselves a quality that is they see in Donald Trump, which is that he has the ability to weather this storm around him and is just always Donald Trump. I mean,
I agree on the grievance stuff. It's that last bit that doesn't connect to me because, like, he complains all the time. All he does is bitch. And that, like, I guess that, like, if you're out there and you
see what he's subjected to, David.
Yeah.
That's what you don't see.
Is that Bette Midler was very nasty to him.
Of course. She was horrible. Did you see what Kathy Griffin did?
She literally cut his head off.
Literally cut his head off.
His son was watching E! News Tonight and he thought that his dad had been killed. He thought he found out on E! That's terrible.
I mean, that's the part that you don't understand. You don't understand, David, because you live in your ivory tower.
Yep. As you can tell, it's got literally has bobbleheads in it, but yes.
Yeah, well, with your fancy bobbleheads.
My Drupal Cabrera bobbleheads.
Don't understand what Donald Trump has been subjected to. He didn't need this. He could have been he was so happy flying on his airplane. He didn't need this.
This is one of the things that's hardest.
You don't appreciate it.
In writing about Trump is that there's never, I mean, it's not like hard because he only ever does one thing, right? So you just have to find new ways to talk about whatever it is he's doing. Now, thankfully, I don't have to really hardly do that at all. But the challenge with it is that any joke that you make, even the most overstated joke, is just basically something that you're going to wind up writing in earnest a year down the line. That's like, it never, there's not like a change in course or an adjustment. It's just like, it's drift and the current moves quickly and it only goes in one direction and it runs all the fucking time. And that, with this sort of thing, the idea that like, if you were to say, we were to go back 5 years and Trump isn't in the primary yet for the Republicans, but you can see it's just this kind of like weird bunch of like creepy governors and like kind of just like veteran TV goblins and like thirsty weirdos. And you're like, well, this is like not a very inspiring group of people. And also their message is basically that like everybody has it easier than you, the white person with money and 2 cars. And then this guy comes in and you're like, they're like this, a man who's basically famous for being like the horny rich guy on TV for decades. like, if you were to make a joke then that you're like, give them time and they're going to turn this dude into a Christ figure, like literally the divorce guy from television is going to become someone who is like the very emblem of sacrifice and civic mindedness. Like, Trump is the funniest person that you could prop up as that. Like, Charlie Sheen, I guess, then would have been a similar joke. And like, here we are, though.
I will say, and that the part that you're missing from this, I think, because at the time I was convinced that he was going to dominate them.
I think did feel that. I don't know if that's revisionist history, but like,
it is for one reason only. And we played that clip of Dave Ramsey. I think you may have seen it, where Dave Ramsey, this, you know, the evangelical money
finance guy.
He's not a finance guy. He's a money, you know, a responsible money guy, essentially. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe he's finance, but
it's like Dr. Phil of money.
Yes.
What a cool gig. I should do that.
But when he expresses that if you're poor, there is a moral failing that you have that you're not addressing. The opposite of that.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually. If the flip side of that coin is, if you are rich, therefore you have to work backwards to figure out how did this fucking idiot, where it's like, whatever, the suit equivalent of Velcro shoes, how did he get a plane?
Exactly. He's a billionaire. And, you know, whether he is or not,
right,
his shtick. And so when he gets on that stage with the other people, everything he says literally trumps theirs because he's richer. Yeah. Like, you know, we had been primed for this. You know, George Bush was the CEO president. You've got, Mitt Romney out there talking about, like, you know, the kid who gets the brown bag, lunch is morally better than the kid who shows up and gets the free lunch at school. Like, they had been trained, and it merges with a religiosity that you are morally righteous if you are wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
And so the wealthiest guy on the stage is necessarily the most morally righteous. That they had built, they had constructed this hierarchy. They constructed the ladder, and he just steps on and at the top of the ladder, and that's it.
I think that's the thing that I've tried to like sort of understand about him, especially during like the end of it, where like the contrast between like how he's being talked about and how he acts has gotten so vast. You know, the two things don't fit in the same plane of reality. And I think it's just like, you start out famous and you start out, you know, at this level where like every American not just knows your name, but knows your name as like a synonym for rich business success man. That like, that is an incredible advantage that like, you know, I don't know where you necessarily start like to, in terms of countering that. Like the Democratic counter would be like Tom Hanks, because it's like he's America's decent face or whatever. But also like now there's a whole conspiracy theory about how he eats babies that like one third of Republicans believe. So that's a challenge.
He, you know, I don't know if they're babies. they're without a doubt toddlers, maybe. All right, let's play one more clip that I think that you'll appreciate. Now, Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick is
great stuff.
He is famous, of course, for saying, let's just, you know, some of our older Americans are expensive. And so the best way to get through this COVID thing is to sort of like pay deference to the COVID gods. And
some things are more important than you being alive, like Dave and Buster's.
Exactly. Here he is speaking about, apparently the Dallas Mavericks have decided not to play the national anthem before games. And boy, oh boy. He does not think that's appropriate.
Well, you know, there are a lot of complex issues here, Chris, when you start talking about the history of the NBA, their tie-in with China, and what happened before, probably for another show in our few minutes we have together. My concern is that we have moved on, Chris, from, remember, one guy kneeling, Kaepernick, that led later to multiple people kneeling. That led to, we won't even come out on the field or the court for the national anthem. And now you have an owner who, as of yesterday, has said, we're just going to cancel the anthem and not play it. So what is the next step? Well, the next step, Chris, this if you take this and look at the larger picture, you open your borders, you start destroying your country. You kick God out of the public square and out of the schools, you start destroying the fabric of the country. And if you start just ignoring the national anthem and not playing it, it becomes the trifecta here. And I don't think Mark was a part of those other issues. Obviously, he and the NBA defended the relationship with China. But in not playing this national anthem is, to me, Chris, in a different but similar way, like the rioters in the streets in Minneapolis and elsewhere this summer, like the rioters that went into the Capitol, and all of that was terrible. But this is an attack on our flag by a very successful, well-known, on television, owns an NBA franchise person that has a serious impact to the general public. Chris, sports is something that brings black, white, and brown, Republican, Democrat, independents together. We don't want politics in it. This is the time when hardworking America gets a chance to sit around the water cooler the next day at the office and talk about the Super Bowl or the Mavs games in this case. We don't want politics into it. So I'm glad the NBA has stepped in and said, no, all teams will play the national anthem.
That's good. That's Newsmax, that was?
I can't tell if that's Newsmax or OWN or one of them, but it's definitely
felt like Newsmax because I feel like you couldn't have had any more news in there. Like that was pretty much, it was like topped out. Like that was
maximum news.
Yeah. Well, it's just, that's where you get the name, of course. Yeah.
So much news that, yeah, it was like flowing over almost.
If it's founded by Maximilian Newsman in 1906.
News saturated.
That was really good stuff though. Really great TV. Really enjoyed where Dan Patrick's mind went there. It's a lot of really surprising choices. I wouldn't have thought that he would bring God into it, but then pow, second encore.
Yeah, there you go. Very surprising. I do like how they're working in the Chinese angle.
I know. It's like,
I mean, Mark Cuban obviously attempting, this is a soft coup.
Yeah.
And I think that's partly why he's talking about, like, you know, the six. The idea is that this is and of course I am included in this because I have a direct line to Mark Cuban about we are trying to weaken the cultural foundations of America so that the Chinese can take over.
And the easiest way to do that is to stop playing a song before Maxie Kleber and Dorian Finney-Smith play against the Jazz. The best thing about this is that as with the captain, I'm stealing Ray Ratto's take from Defector, but the best part about this is that nobody noticed. There's nobody at the games. There's a plague on.
No, that's the best part. Nobody's going to hear the national anthem at the game because nobody's at the game.
Yeah. But also it's like, what do people do during the national anthem? Like, have you, like, in terms of somebody, I don't know that Dan Patrick goes to a lot of sporting events. It seems like something he might be into, but he also seems like more of a, like, owner's box type of guy. Like, the reverence afforded to the national anthem at sporting events is, like, if you really cared about the national anthem, you would not want it played at a football game or a basketball game or a baseball game. Because if you're supposed to be spending those 55 seconds thinking about your country, like, way more people are getting nachos.
It is sort of amazing that that's the only place that we play it.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I feel like we need to start playing it more. I think this is the natural response.
Why don't they play it at the beginning of, like, the State of the Union or something? Like, why is it, like, just the place where you get, like, just, I mean, with all due respect to people who go to sporting events, it's not, like, necessarily the greatest cross-section of Americans.
Well, hold on. It's the thing we all get together over the water cooler, white, black, and brown, and we talk about the Super Bowl. That's, like, what Dan Patrick does at his office with his buddies. He's like, hey, do you guys see that Super Bowl? What'd you think of that?
I think we should probably maybe install it in water coolers, like whenever you pull the
lid. I was reminded of this earlier today. There's a restaurant in Annapolis, Maryland, where Bill Belichick is a customer. He did an interview there years ago, I remember, and he like insisted that they do it there. He's like, I love this place. It's a barbecue restaurant where they play the national anthem once an hour and everybody just stands up and salutes it. And I feel like this is like we should be moving in that direction.
Yeah.
There's too many places where you can't stand up and listen to the national anthem regularly.
Well, I will say this. David, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program, but today you've also been inspirational to us, and I think maybe we will now use that as our theme song.
I think that's, honestly, if that's my legacy, is that you're frequently interrupted for no reason that can be seen in the conversation by the national anthem, and you have to stand up with your head leaving the frame, then my work here will have been not for naught.
Folks can read more from David at...
Don't know to end on. Sorry.
And there it is. We will be doing a national anthem randomly throughout all future shows. David, always a pleasure. Thanks so
Thanks very much, man. I appreciate it. See you.
All right, folks. We're going to head. You know what? Screw it. We won't. Let's just Freebie Friday. Freebie.
Hand on heart, or at least behind your back, Sam. Take that, Gorka.
Thank you. All right, that's good.
That was a Star Spangled Banner and not... Oh, wait. I'm sorry. Never...
We don't even...
I was thinking of the Pledge of Allegiance.
I can't even think about what it is. Hey, folks, just a reminder. Nomi's show is right after this. You can check out the Nomi Key Show, youtube.com/TheNomiKeyShow, or twitch.tv/_NomiKeyShow. No, NomiKey_show. Today is Femme Friday. Lisha Brooks will be on with Nomi Key and Natalie Shore and Esperanza Fonseca. All great guests. Excellent. Check it out. Also, don't forget twitch.tv/TheAntifada. Jamie and crew are back with a bunch of different episodes, and they are live streaming like 2 or 3 days a week at least now. Twitch.tv/TheAntifada. Matt, what's happening on the Matt Leckian Media Enterprise.
Ben Burgess last night on Left Reckoning. Now check it out. We had a really fun show. Patreon.com/LeftReckoning to get the post game.
And as always, folks, it's your support that reminds me that you can become a member. Join the MajorityReport.com. Should say, so next week, here's the schedule, just a little house cleaning, as it were. Monday, we will be doing presenting a pre-taped program. Brendan, who is it again? I cannot remember what we decided to run on Monday.
It's the one we're recording this afternoon.
No, that's not true. The one we're recording this
afternoon. Oh, okay.
It's the one on the slave trade in New York.
That's right.
Thanks for all the details. Thanks for filling that in. Appreciate that. That was well done. and then Emma will be here.
Jonathan Daniel Wells on the Kidnapping Club.
Oh, right. The Kidnapping Club. Yeah, that's nuts. A great interview. And we're going to run that on a Monday. Emma will be here holding down the fort next week. And some of us will be on vacation. We're spreading it out now. So check that out. Let's go and play this clip. This is... Here it is. What should we play? Oh, should we write Mike Huckabee? Yeah, since we're on a Newsmax jig, let's play this one. Clip number 8. Mike Huckabee trying to indoctrinate the little ones through the older ones.
And grandparents, great news! Mike Huckabee's education company wants to help your family to celebrate President Trump and all that he has accomplished as our president. For a limited time, you can get the Kids Guide to President Trump for free. This fun kids guide will help your kids learn all about the president's greatest achievements. What's more, it's part of a very special gift bundle that includes a free kids magazine and free video lesson too. To learn more and order the Kids Guide to President Trump gift bundle, just visit freetrumpguide.com. That's
Let's visit. Will you, Matt? Can we visit freetrumpguide.com? Because I want to know what the grift is here. There's obviously some way that they're making money off of this, right? I mean, this isn't just a public service that Mike Huckabee is partaking in. He is making some cash off of this in some fashion or another. Let's see. Oh, what is it? What do we got? Everything. Here's everything you get free with this gift bundle. All right, let's click it. Let's please send my child this free gift bundle. Wow, that's great. Step two, your email address. Oh, wait, $2 order total. That's it. How's that free? It's $2. I guess it maybe costs money. Or are they building an email list? Maybe that's what it is. I wonder what else there. I wonder what the that's going to be interesting.
The parent company is Learn Our History, which I can show now.
Interesting. And that very well may be a right-wing funded type of situation, you think? Or
yeah.
God, man, we have nothing like this.
Our history is interesting. Who is included in our? So Columbus, definitely.
Yeah.
George Washington. So that's
Go to the W.B. Du Bois.
Candace Owens.
Wait. No, that couldn't have been. Who was that supposed to be?
No, I'm just making a joke.
There's one black person on here.
Yeah.
Go to the MLK page.
You got it.
Our lessons.
Yeah.
Oh, here are chattel all the lessons. Slavery.
Is there anyone else on chattel slavery?
Our birth of revolution, World War II. Wow, wait.
Oh,
skip a bunch of pages, winning our freedom, and then we go down to World War II, and then what do we got? Scroll down. And then what do we got after World War II? What is that one on that there? That's there. What are they signing there? Oh, the Declaration. Lewis and Clark, choosing our president. Let's go down. Let's see. The Cuban Missile Crisis, the Cold War, race to space. What happened to, I guess, slavery? Keep going down. Well, we get to the Civil War. America's fighters. Oh, and America's founders and civil rights. Well, that's weird. That was not, I don't think the founding was necessarily the, and then of course the Reagan Revolution, of course, the Great Recession, 9/11, Civil War, freedom and sacrifice, the Civil War, brother against brother, learning to lead, the Civil War,
brothers. Oh God.
One Nation Under God, America's Governors, Congress, Gold Rush. This is pretty stunning. Yeah. We haven't quite gotten to the civil rights movement. Oh, wait, there's the Wild West, history of armed forces, America's government, the Supreme Court, America.
I got to say, I like that the cowboy is not white in the Wild West one, because that's actually accurate.
Wow. The Ladies of Liberty, they have Rosie Riveter there, of course, and they're not talking about unions, without a doubt, right? So that's not even in there. American Veterans, American the Beautiful, American Dream. Giving back, charity, the melting pot, the American flag, a winning. So we don't get anything about. Wow, it's that's pretty. Nothing about the civil rights movement.
Well, it was the founders and fighters for civil rights. Remember, so the founders were part of the civil rights
movement, right? And then, of course, oddly, nothing about the Great Depression. Or the New Deal. That's weird a little bit. That seems like a big missing. I guess it would be too much to ask for Reconstruction to be in there.
No witch trials, which would have been cool.
That would have been good. But that would have been like, how would they spin that to the witches deserve what they got? Here's Brian Kilmeade explaining why the media is not talking about falling COVID cases, although I don't know. I mean, they are. We still have over 3,000 deaths a day, but the number of infections are dropping fairly dramatically. However, we know
or at least we suspect that these new COVID strains are going to become more prominent. We know that mask wearing is up. There's a report out today that shows that that once New York City closed down, infection rates dropped by like 75%. And so we know that people are starting to adopt best practices. We're also at, I think, over 2 million vaccinations a day. Joe Biden just announced that by the end of July, we should have 300 million Americans vaccinated, or at least 300 million people in this country vaccinated. But here is Brian Kilmeade with Fox getting into the conspiracy game. Remember, this guy was also talking probably months ago that on November 4th or whatever, the day after the election, COVID goes away, right? Except we lost 100,000 people in January.
Oh. Big story, of course, within the coronavirus headline is we're trying to control it. And the good news is 36% decrease in cases over the last 14 days, 15% decrease in deaths over the last 15 days. The numbers are astoundingly good. We're not talking about that because there's a lot of people who want to get that $1.9 trillion passed. And if it looks like the numbers are going down, why do we need to give out $2 trillion that we don't have? That's the problem.
But he doesn't recognize the fact that infections are going down because maybe people aren't going to work, or maybe he's not recognizing that what that's supposed to address is the near million who have lost their jobs any given week over the past couple of months, or what it's going to take to rebuild the economy, what it's going to take to pay off those back rent. I mean, on and on and on. They're flailing around now for anything that they can find to just sort of hang their hat on. It's sort of fascinating. Let's go to the IMs, shall we? Cody Punk, Sam, can you remind me why Rachel Bitkofer got on your program as well as all this unearned attention? I'm asking because I know she works at the Lincoln Project. She was one of the few people who nailed the outcome of the 2018 election. That was her claim to fame. I don't think 2020 she nailed in the same way. She may have done well, but not in the same way that she did 2018, and particularly relative to what other people had predicted. Nolan from Detroit suburbs. Hey, Sam, I finished my undergrad in physics and computer science last December. Have a good paying job now and decided to become a member. Oh, well, thank you. I have many questions, but I'll start with this one. Could you explain to me what means testing is? It's come up a few times on recent shows with Democrats' obsession about it, but I'm not sure I understand the details. It is programs that are rolled out that basically say you need to have, you know, financial programs generally, that it's only available to you if you make less than this amount of money, or you have less than this amount of money, or you're this. That's basically it. I mean, that you are only eligible for this if you make under, or you have under, a certain amount of money. Now, a lot of people say, like, well, that seems legit. Like, why am I going to give $2,000 to someone who's making $500,000 a year? And, I don't think broadly speaking, people are too worried about means testing at that level, but even still, if your concern is you don't want to waste money, there is a much more efficient way to deal with that problem. Okay? Because what you can do, we have a mechanism now to regulate how much money and services people get from our government. Notice I said money and services. And that way that we regulate that, or how much they pay for those services, is through taxation. We already have a system to tax people. So if you want to roll out a program in a crisis, let's say, or even not in a crisis, Social Security, which is a social insurance program that pays people, that people pay into, and they get money back when they are older to make sure that they're not living in poverty. If you want to make sure that we're not wasting those government resources on people who don't really need it,
there is a very easy mechanism in which to make sure that we're not wasting that money, and that is called taxation. We already have an IRS. It is already requesting information from all people in this country as to how much money they've made and how much they've paid in taxes. And you can simply raise the taxes on these people. And you will then basically have a far more efficient way of saving, if that's what you're interested in, government money. You provide a universal benefit to people. Everybody gets $2,000. And then at the end of the year, you claw that money back through taxation. Now, you may say, like, well, wait, what? That's a waste. Why would we give the check to $2,000 to that wealthy person and then have to claw it back? Because otherwise, you've got to set up a system to make sure that that wealthy person doesn't get the check in the first place. And that's more expensive than actually just saying, we just raise your taxes. So there you go. Country Fury Roads. Last night, Mississippi passed two anti-trans bills, one of which specifically bans trans women from competing in women's sports. At the same time, they proposed other anti-trans bills and voted down LGBTQ civil rights protection. Like, what? Like, why?
The North Dakota House did the same thing.
Government so worried about who participates in on sports teams. Do you see these kinds of actions holding up given the Biden administration's move on LGBTQ protections? I don't know if there are. I don't know what civil rights legislation it might would interfere with the ability of a state. I mean, I don't even know how a state could do this. I guess maybe it depends. Is it in schools? If it's in colleges, there might be, you know, like a Title IX type of situation. Do you see them adding to gender-affirming care to the ACA, though we need Medicare for All? I don't know. I just don't have a sense of where the Biden administration is. A lot of those woke libs that defend the ACA won't realize this is a blank spot because it was passed in 2009 before even same-sex marriage was 100% politically safe. And living as a trans woman in red states, Missouri and West Virginia, is how I have thousands of dollars of medical debt. I mean, that's a good question. I have not seen that addressed anywhere. I don't know. It's not inconceivable to me that the Biden administration might make that change. Cali Mailman, why isn't adding more House members talked to about more? This would mitigate the unfairness of the Electoral College by diminishing the worth of smaller states who wouldn't likely gain any more seats, and also mitigate gerrymandering somewhat. It should be talked about just as much as voting reform and adding D.C. and Puerto Rico as states. I think there is a very good argument. I mean, we've had 435 for how many years? I mean, when our population was probably half the size, less, right? When was the last time we added to the number of congressional members?
1913.
And so, I mean, we've probably tripled our population. Seems a little bit absurd, doesn't it? I mean, Mutz Butts, Trump is the pus or the wrath of the whitehead of the Republican Party. Sounds lefty. So I guess they did have time for a Senate trial before Trump left office after all. Of course they did. Gumbo Shivers, in response to the cyber threat interview, 2018, the America's Water Infrastructure Act passed, which requires every water system to have a risk and resiliency plan. However, this is an unfunded mandate, meaning cash-strapped towns have to pay for it. From what I can tell as a water engineer, towns are doing the bare minimum to complete it and focus on physical assets like fences and locks. After the Florida attempt, I wonder if the federal government will fund it or if there'll be a greater focus on the cyber aspect. I think you're going to have to wait until something very tragic happens before we see something like that, my guess. Area Man, just wanted to make sure you saw that according to the DOJ video, evidence shows that the guy with the zip ties didn't bring them. He found them lying on a table in the Capitol and picked them up.
I think it's important to keep revisiting evidence like that and the debunking of the fire-extinguishing, bludgeoning murder story, given on how much emphasis has been placed on premeditated killing and kidnapping of congressmen by people trying to use the riot to justify further empowering law enforcement intelligence agencies post 9/11. We don't know about how that guy died, the fire extinguisher. And so the guy who had the zip ties didn't bring them in. Do we know who brought them in? I guess theoretically, the Capitol Police. Is that the argument? I sort of think that the premeditated killing and kidnapping of congresspeople, I think maybe the bombs start to undercut a little bit about like the premeditated aspect of it.
Well, was he holding the zip ties for safekeeping then?
I mean, maybe he was making sure nobody else got them. I mean, I don't think that we need to minimize. And of course, in these circumstances, there's never been a news event that ever takes place that doesn't have some measure of misinformation. And I think it's perfectly legitimate to say, you know, for people to be issuing corrections and whatnot. But I don't think that you need to minimize what took place there. The violence, the premeditation, what more than likely would have happened if these people had gotten hold of Congress people to push back on any type of particularly legislation that is passed to deal with, domestic terrorism or whatever however they denote it. I just don't think that's, I actually think that it, you know, to be honest with you, that it, has the opposite effect. When you start to get into these sort of quibbles, and it is a quibble, the guy died. I don't know if he died because of a bear spray, gave him some type of reaction. But, you know, cops lost their fingers. You can see video of cops being like writhing in pain, being beaten. By any measure, it is shocking that only five people died during that. And, you know, when you include the bombs in it and et cetera, et cetera. I think when you try and minimize that, you're not helping the case about why there shouldn't be new legislation. It's like, to me, that's sort of like the functional equivalent of like, you know, Assad is not a bad guy. The anti-Assadists are worse as a justification for non-involvement by the U.S., The reason why the United States should not be involved in that is because it never works out well for anybody when we get involved in those conflicts. Period. End of story. But when you start like defending Assad, it begins to cut away at the reasonableness. Nobody's going to listen to your argument. That's why I'm very, very skeptical of, I mean, it's one thing to say like these things should be corrected. It's another to sort of like imply that this is being, you know, that this is leveraged. Like, it doesn't work that way. And when people do that ostensibly to, you know, push back on what you're talking about, I think it's ineffective. I think it's actually does more harm than good. And B, it makes me think that people doing that are doing it for maybe other reasons, because it's self-evidently. Like, why are you arguing the second order thing? Argue the first order thing. Because your second order argument is like, because there's been some media misreporting, doesn't mean that you're going to get like, you know, if somebody's like, well, you didn't get killed with a fire extinguisher, you got killed with bear spray. That's why we shouldn't have domestic terror laws. What? No, we shouldn't have domestic terror laws because they're a bad thing in and of themselves. Angel, Ben Dixon looking sharp as F lately. I know it. That was the first thing I thought. I was like, how come he looks better on my show than I do? That's not appropriate. Lee, NYC. RNs have always fought for these patients. This is not new. I'm glad to live in New York, for for-profit medical entities are essentially prevented by law. While this does not prevent abuses by the non-profit entities, it's better than being controlled by out-of-state a-holes. I'm not denying that RNs have always fought for these patients. But I'm saying that the use of that and put in forefronting that when you're striking, I think is the difference. Shelby from Phoenix. My 19-year-old daughter just got a new job. She asked me if she should join the union. Of course. I explained to her the entire history of unions and the attack on them. She's probably regretting asking me, but we had our first family member in a union. Can I get a shofar? What is the point of that last IM? It's a aggravated assault, at least. Exactly. Be careful. They know your show goes out to a lot of people. Could be a conservative or alt-left clown. Manslaughter, at least. Exactly. Exactly. Shady as F. AF. We should stay away now from I want to handle my debt and finances just like Trump did. His name was Cintarelli. Right. Okay. Stalemate. Every time my four-year-old hears me listening to the Majority Report, he tells me, Dad, presidents are boring. They never talk about me. What's your kid's name? I'll talk about him. Vaping Goldfish. Sam, please reference ballot question number one, 2018, Massachusetts. Patient-nurse ratio. I will check it out. Joe Biden's Quip toothbrush. GOP is full-on spectacle. Are you using spectacle in a DeBordis way? I don't think so. I notice people have been using that more and more these days, and they're not using it correctly, as far as I'm concerned, from a situationist perspective. Here is Seema Verma. She is at the... This is so perfect. October 2020. This is just months ago. She was Donald Trump's... what is it? It's the
Center for Medicare Services.
Yes, CMS. So that's CMS, Center for Medicare Services. She was brought in there to basically try to help privatize the system. And here she is at the Aspen Institute. So perfect. Talking about how governors, well, listen to this.
What I heard from governors across the country is that they wanted to do more than just hand out insurance cards. They wanted to help people rise out of poverty, help them be independent. Nobody wants to be dependent on a government program to be on the Medicaid program. They need help. They need help with their health care. And what we also saw in the data is that people that are engaged in work have better health care outcomes. We've known that for many years. And so
she's talking, first off, I mean, this is more of that sort of like moralizing. I got news for you. Medicaid, everybody I've known who's ever been on Medicaid has said it's great. Sometimes you can't find a doctor, and that's part of the problem, that you can't find a doctor that will take it. But in terms of what it provides, I have never heard anybody say, God, I wish I wasn't on Medicaid. I wish I had private insurance. I've heard people say, like, I wish I could keep my Medicaid. There are 10 states that have asked permission and were granted waivers by Republican states, by the Trump administration, to allow those states to require people to have a job to qualify for Medicaid. So you can see the sort of the twist here, right? They're doing a favor to people. If you can't find a job, you don't get Medicaid. You need incentive to get a job. Otherwise, you don't have health care.
It's amazing, like, this dependent on government for health care. Like, you can't be self-dependent in this regard. You're either dependent on the a government program or private health insurance.
Exactly. You're either dependent on your boss. You're dependent upon a certain amount of money that you get. You're dependent upon the largesse of the insurance company, doesn't exist, or the government. That's it. There is no self-insurance programs. And three states, if I'm not mistaken, actually implemented it. And I believe all three were prohibited by federal judges from instituting their program. Well, Joe Biden today, or I should say yesterday, his administration just basically put on notice all of those states. That permission we gave you, that waiver that the U.S. government gave you to impose work requirements on Medicaid recipients, we're rescinding it. So there you go. You're done. I mentioned the other day that we got a great letter, email, from somebody who was making a case about QAnon, that it wasn't just a function of conservatives, that it was also a function of sort of like the new, there was a new age component to a lot of people. A lot of sort of like yoga-ish stuff, a lot of this travels on Facebook quite a bit. A lot of it is like, there's a big sort of libertarian anti-authority streak in former hippies. And their argument was that a lot of these people, you know, they knew a lot of people who sort of got radicalized by QAnon in that way. Here is CNN interviewing the children of parents who fell into the QAnon conspiracy. It's sort of fascinating.
I live just a few blocks south of the Capitol, and so I started seeing people walking on the sidewalk heading up to the Capitol with Trump flags and red hats, and I thought to myself, I wonder if my mom's here. I just thought to myself, let me check her YouTube, and lo and behold, she was.
We are here at this rally. Look at this.
I will never stop loving my parents, but it's this switch that flips in them when they're talking about what the latest Q drop means. They're not logical anymore. They're not understanding, and often they're not kind.
Not only does she really believe it, but it intersects in her mind with her religion. She has never put anything else on the pedestal equal to the Bible. And it really feels like that with this QAnon stuff.
A conspiracy theory has taken over both these women's lives, but not by their choosing.
I just want to have a mom who loves me, or just we're past that.
They say their parents have been sucked into QAnon.
My childhood was as perfect as any childhood could be. In the recent year or 2 years, where this has become so much stronger within them, they've become completely different people.
This woman is still desperately trying to save her relationship with her parents. It's why we've agreed to hide her identity.
How did this all start with your parents?
All through growing up, it was constantly, oh my gosh, like the Clintons, oh my gosh, the Illuminati, things like that. But it all started really in the 2016 election cycle. Hillary Clinton and all of the Democrats are pedophilic and cannibalistic people that are trying to control the world. Things definitely heightened when I got to college. They would background search my professors. Hey, your professor, yeah, like they're a registered Democrat.
She knows my wife is a Capitol Police officer. When she did that, that said everything to me, that she was willing to put my wife's life in danger. And if she had called me up or texted me later that day or the next day and said, hey, listen, I was at this rally. It got way out of hand. I'm really sorry. How are you guys? That would have changed everything. But it's been crickets. I haven't heard from her.
We were.
I mean, you know, that Q and the way they just talked about, like, when the Q drops came, it's sort of like, that's like, I'm not turning this into a commercial, but like that's one of the things, like the Catch Killer game, right? Does, like, it's sort of like the QAnon was like gamified, and it just sort of like hits that, like, sort of like dopamine shot, like, oh, there's more information, we can figure this out. I do think that it is, and look, and I think this is consistent with the theory that New Age folks are open to it too. I mean, I think a lot of that religion, New Age stuff, I'm not I'm not knocking it. I mean, but it is a way in which people deal with modernity, and it provides answers. And I think for people who are under, you know, stress or duress in some instances, or who just have trouble with all the sort of like information and options that exist in our society, like anything that provides answers, that takes some things off the table, that clears up the lingering doubts, I think is attractive to people.
It's super depressing. I mean, like I don't know. I don't even know really what to say about it. Like this is a massive F up that Facebook and, you know, social media has. And it's not a surprise that you see every once in a while stories about workforce rebellion saying, hey, we should do something about what we're doing to the people that use our product. I mean, Joel Kaplan and Mark Zuckerberg, I guess, held the line so that the kids like that couldn't cancel their parents. And, you know, I guess, I don't know. It's frustrating.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, that the social media is like it really is sort of like I think the analogy here is that it's like a main line. It's like literally like we're just going to put this right into your veins. It's out there. It's always existed, right? I mean, Alex Jones was out there. I had friends who I sort of lost to that world. Folks may remember a buddy of mine who I used to reference more than I do now. I haven't talked to him in years, who actually came on the radio show. And he came on and said, you know, Dick Cheney is a changeling. He is a lizard person. He was talking about David Icke's. And it was sort of half a joke. And then over time, it became real. It was really messed up. The last I heard, he got kicked out of his co-op supermarket for saying inappropriate things. I'm not going to go into that. People can figure out who it is. Space Possum, regarding the U.S. education system, regardless of what happens with collegiate students' debt situation, the pre-K through high school system is severely underfunded. The average educational quality is pretty low, especially in rural areas with low property values. Shouldn't that be receiving more attention and maintenance, for the lack of a better word? The outcome of public pre-K through high school education should be equivalent to a liberal, without a doubt. You know, I think like, I think it's very hard right now to talk about what needs to be like sort of at the top of the list. What needs to be at the top of the list really right now is how do we deal with COVID? And what are the things sort of like COVID adjacent? But I would hope that sort of the second bite at the apple, whether it comes through reconciliation or we get the filibuster, you know, I think ultimately what we're going to do is we're going to see the filibuster. Ari Berman mentioned it sort of in passing yesterday. I think we're going to see a filibuster reform that is going to be a version of reconciliation. Reconciliation is filibuster. You can look at reconciliation as its own thing, or you can look at it as a filibuster reform that for legislation that directly affects the U.S. budget, you don't need 2/3 majority. And I think we could end up developing other spheres of legislation, voting rights, and then the question would be like, well, is there a way to finance public education that is not tied to real estate taxes, property taxes? Axis Prime, you signed a contract, says Chucklefucks, who support Trump in his many bankruptcies. Constitutional cancel culture has Frank Luntz written all over it. Inkcake, Rick Santelli. When you start doing interviews about Q and the Trump cult, it would be interesting if you found someone with an international perspective, too. I haven't seen any reporting on it, but I have friends and family in France who are in Q. Interesting. Beat the Reaper, $45 billion added to $1.9 trillion is 0.2% more or 1/42nd. Thank you. Cane thread. The same way the EPA will violate the earth more or less depending on what type of administration is in office, the CDC and other sources will twist science and release results that forward the agenda and support the priorities of whatever administration's in office. I am a teacher. I want kids to back in school, but I want politicians to be effing honest. Erdogan. And even if all those people needed that money because of mental health problems, give it to them. Yeah, of course. Like, why? Like, yeah, even if you stipulate that there's something else going on there, they got other problems. Okay. Can you only qualify for a $1,400 check or a $2,000 check or a $600 check if you're a total douchebag? That seems like a weird way of doing it. Any economist will acknowledge the wealth effect, says BB Teach. When someone's assets or debts fundamentally change, so do their spending patterns in a fundamental way. What an a-hole to spout this stuff from a supposedly moral perspective. I totally agree. Yeah, I know. I found that outrageous. Mind pillow guy. $1,400 is more than a month of income for someone working full-time making minimum wage. Dave Ramsey doesn't think an entire month of income would be a difference between making it or not when they are hardly scraping by in the first place. What a piece of shit. Yeah, I know, I agree. Sam from Ottawa. So Ramsey was broke, yet I'd feel pretty safe assuming after going through bankruptcy he still owned more assets than any one of the students he's now condemning. Spendy boy. People want to read about Dave Ramsey. Don't. Wyoming Ryan. Dave is right. See, last few nights people have been calling in with a yearly income of $200,000 and hundreds of thousands in debt. So yeah, these type of people who can just call every day can't be helped by $600 or $2,000 or more. Just another grifter. David's, yeah. Southside Brewer. FYI, Dave Ramsey recently fired an employee because the employee's spouse criticized his company's massive and maskless Christmas party. He provided, oh yeah, that's the other thing. When he interviews someone who works there, he makes the spouse come in to interview the spouse, too. Is that messed up?
Well, you made us do that.
I made you guys bring in your significant others, yeah. Yeah.
Don't you think that's a little hypocritical of you to criticize him, though?
Well, you could approach it as hypocrisy. I mean... Let's put it this way, Brendan. If my company, if I had a $42 million headquarters, that's when I would stop doing that. That's my point.
Fair enough.
All right. I'm going to take four more of these, and then we're going to get out of here. The Owl. Palin was a MILF hot, though. I'm not sure MTG has the same kind of hot. Apparently, there was... I'm not going to go into that. There was a report that she had multiple affairs at the gym.
God, can we move on?
Did you see the pictures of the guys?
No.
Go look at the pictures of the guys. The guy's wearing they're big guys, big weightlifters. And the guy's wearing like these sort of running shorts. It's really tough. Tough stuff. Really tough. Go watch. Go look at it, Matt. I wanted to hear your reaction. Pro-Life Spider, Kids Guide for Low-Key Authoritarian Indoctrination. Next, sign up K-5 workshop about states' rights. Shake my head. JC, I wonder if Dan Patrick's church begins with the national anthem, or are they supporting China? Fierce Deity, I couldn't help but think of another Rudyard Kipling poem that fits Trump much better, entitled The White Man's Burden. Lawyer Adjacent.
I made an Orange Man's Burden joke in the chat, and yeah.
In a way, the QAnon feeling is like a sugar high followed by a crash, like you would be getting eating old-style breakfast cereal, not something you get with a magic spoon, a keto-friendly alternative that leaves you feeling fresh all day long. Prairie Fire Kowalski. Due to the cold weather this weekend, the state GOP meeting has been postponed. I'm surprised they ain't going ahead with it just so to get a half frostbite argument against climate change. Sam Cedar, smelly armpits. You and David Roth have great chemistry. You should do a podcast. Tokyo Gouda. New Adam Curtis docuseries dropped yesterday. It's like 6+ hour companion piece to hypernormalization. Any chance you can get Curtis on to discuss? Oh, I'm going to check that out, and then we'll do that. We're way overdue to talk to him. All right, three more. John. Sam, you must address the controversy of you stealing drops from your fellow YouTuber R.M. Brown. I know you're jaded from Pac-Man stealing your background, but two wrongs don't make a right. What were the drops I stole from R.M. Brown?
Is this what you were talking about with the jean shorts?
No, it's worse than that. Much worse. Wait, go to the Daily Mail. Scroll down, dude. You're going to be really bummed you did that. Ryan Cole, I think the Trump Kipling poem tribute should be at least once a week for the break between the regular show and the fun half. And let's see. Comrade Ply just became a member. Left his best, hoping for a show far. Comrade Flurpy. And then the final IM of the week.
I saw the pic you were talking about, by the way.
Disturbing, right?
Yeah.
Married to Mothra. Q people need a hobby. Matt, Brendan, Jamie, Emma, good job this week. See you guys next week.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. Finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in.